Punt Podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Mercy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the Punt podcast here with William Hill ahead of the Premier League weekend. We are going to look at the five televised games in the top flight and we'll discuss England's performance in the Euro 2020 qualifiers. And breaking news as well, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the inevitability of him getting the Manchester United job has come to fruition. Dave Callan on the podcast here alongside, first of all, our regular pundit, Derek McGovern. Good morning to you, Derek.
How are we doing, Dave? All right?
I'm very well. How are you, sir?
Yes, just a bit sad that the international break is over. Said nobody ever.
I know that you love those international breaks, Derek. And joining us from the FWA is the London football correspondent for The Guardian and The Observer. Dominic Fifield is on the line with us. Dominic, good morning to you.
Morning, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I actually enjoyed the international break. England were pretty good in their two performances against the Czech Republic and Montenegro. I know you, Dominic, were at both those games, and there are definite reasons for optimism. They're playing with vim and vigour, and they are a young team going places.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Certainly going forward, they're prolific suddenly, aren't they? They're prolific scorers. Very exciting to see the likes of Jadon Sancho and Callum Hudson-Odoi given starts in those two matches. There was a period in the Czech Republic game where we had two 18-year-old wingers on the pitch at the same time, which was fairly historic. I think it's the first time in 138 years that have happened with England. So, and then when you throw in the continued excellence of Raheem Sterling, Harry Kane, not just as a scorer as well, but also as a supplier, it's good to see Ross Barkley looking the part in midfield as well. There's a lot of positives to take out of that. Declan Rice is where you could chuck into that, because that was quite a mature performance in Podgorica. The only downside to it all, of course, is there were other issues that overshadowed everything in Montenegro. But even in that, to be honest, the way that Sterling, Hudson-Odoi conducted themselves and even spoke about what they'd gone through, I thought was pretty impressive and admirable and showed commendable maturity from all concerned, really.
Absolutely, and I think Gareth Southgate handled it very well as well. The racist chanting from some quarters of the ground in Montenegro. England are actually 9-2 second favourites to win the Euros in 2020. Is that a realistic position, Derek, in the betting for England, given what you've seen from the European nations in the last couple of months?
Pull the other one, Dave. Come on. You know, all this acclaim for England reminds me when Arsenal used to play the Bugsy Malone 11 in League Cup games and it'd be Burnley something like 4 or 5-0, and we'd be saying, oh, look at these players, they're going to be absolutely fantastic. In about 3 years' time, pretty much all of them have disappeared. I'm not saying that, you know, the likes of Sancho and Hudson-Odoi will disappear, but come on, they're playing Czech Republic, the only team Republic of Ireland had beaten in about 2 years leading up to the weekend. And then they played Montenegro, a country where they still point at airplanes, paper ones. I'm sorry, I'm not having it. And also, any manager, I've still got my doubts about the manager, any England manager that can give Eric Dyer a starting place, well, I'm sorry, the jury is still out big time on Southgate for me for that very sin.
Dominic, provide some balance here. It's reasonable for England to just be behind France in the betting, isn't it, given what we've seen?
I think so, yeah. I agree to a certain extent on the selection of Dyer for the first game, but it was actually a bit of a lucky stroke for Southgate that Dyer pulled up injured, because he could then ditch that two defensive midfielder option against the Czech Republic, because it wasn't really required in that game. But I just think there's a depth of quality now that England can choose from, considering that they've They've scored 10 goals in those two qualifying matches. I know that the opposition wasn't great, but you beat what's in front of you. He scored 10 goals in those matches without Marcus Rashford in anywhere near that 11, with Dele Alli semi-fit, no Jesse Lingard. I think there's Southgate has stumbled across and been brave enough to pick a lot of younger players, a lot of young talent, and I think it does bode well for the future. We can doubt the quality of opposition in the Euro qualifying, and England will walk that group, no doubt at all. But I don't think we should forget the fact that they beat Croatia and Spain back in the autumn, which is an indication of some quality there. And yeah, they're the only side that reached the semi-finals of the World Cup who qualified from their group in the Nations League. So I do think the future is promising. There's a lot of promising signs out there. I don't quite share Derek's pessimism on the whole thing. I think there's, for the first time in a long time, we can actually be quite positive about the England national team.
France are 100-30, by the way, to win the Euros in 2020. England 9-2, Spain 13-2, Belgium 7-1, Germany 8-1, Holland 12-1, and it's 14-1 and bigger the rest of them. And just before I came into the studio to record this podcast with you two gentlemen, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was announced as the permanent Manchester United manager. He's been given a 3-year contract. Reward for his good work since Jose Mourinho departed, Derek. I still believe it's premature. Maybe I'm in the minority here, but I always thought Manchester United's results were going to see an upturn once the cloud of Jose Mourinho was lifted. And that's happened. He's only lost one league match in 13, Solskjaer. And there has been a groundswell of support for him to get the job full time, and Manchester United have made that decision before the end of the season.
Yeah, well, that's what surprises me. I thought they'd leave until the end of the season. I don't really see what the advantage is in doing it now. Yeah, there's been a groundswell behind him, and rightly so. Well, probably a tidal wave behind him. He's done so well. I had my doubts when they got chased in the defeat by PSG in the Champions League, but he turned that round big time in the return leg, and I thought, well, maybe he should get the job after that. It would have been hard not to give him it. But, you know, in a year's time, you're saddled with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, a man sacked by Cardiff, and players might be thinking, should we go to Man United to play for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, or Man City to play for Pep Guardiola, or Real Madrid to play for Zinedine Zidane? That might be a problem in the future for Man United. I sure hope it is.
Dom, I can only assume that Mauricio Pochettino wasn't going to be available in the summer. I know Solskjaer's done well, but Pochettino has that overall body of managerial, top-quality managerial experience. I am definitely in the minority, but I'm quite surprised still.
I can only imagine that on the timing front that this is something to do with contract negotiations or transfer dealings in the summer, and they wanted to get a head start and to sell Manchester United. You need to players, and even those that are here, they need to know who the manager is going to be next year. And I suspect that any move for Mauricio Pochettino would have been quite a protracted affair to try and negotiate with Daniel Levy. So that wouldn't have been easy to extricate him from his contract at the new White Hart Lane. So, look, it makes sense. I think he's just earned it, hasn't he? The results that he's had at United since taking over as caretaker manager have been excellent. And really, what Manchester United as a club and a supporter base would have expected United to be playing like for all season. After the toxicity of the latter days of Mourinho's tenure, I think he's a bit of an antidote to it all. Yeah, we'll see long term whether he is a long-term solution, but you know, I think he's almost felt like a breath of fresh air since going into Old Trafford. So he's earned this opportunity to have a job permanently.
Okay, let's get stuck into the weekend action then, starting with Fulham versus Manchester City, which is a 12:30 kickoff on Saturday. Fulham 22-1 to win this match at home. The draw 8-1, Manchester City 1-9. The enhancements, Alexander Mitrovic to score and Fulham to win, was 25-1. That's been boosted out to 33-1. If you fancy Kevin De Bruyne to score in a Manchester City win, that was 17-10. That's been enhanced to 2-1. This is, of course, a hashtag your odds match as well. So if you One to bet that's not priced up, tweet using that hashtag YourOdds to @WilliamHill, and the traders will endeavour to give you a price. And Manchester City have the chance, Derek, to move back to the top of the Premier League with a win over Fulham, who are marooned at the bottom. Just looking at these prices, we've been recording this podcast for many years now, Derek. I don't know if I've ever seen a home side in the Premier League at 22-1.
I know. No one's ever been bigger to get a result at home, not even me. It's just incredible, but it just shows how bad Fulham are. I mean, Man City 1-9. Who is going to... I mean, they will win. They will win. I know they will win. But I still won't back them. I just can't bring myself to back a team at 1-9 away from home. Especially this is a clash of the managerial giants, isn't it? Scott Parker and Pep Guardiola. Oh, Jesus. You know, I'd forgotten this. Parker was that guy who... he burst to prominence, didn't he, as a kid in the early 90s by performing magical tricks in a McDonald's TV advert. Remember that? His payment was a lifetime supply of Big Macs, which he donated to Alexander Mitrovic, I think, by the look of things. He was discovered at 12 in a McDonald's ad. Mitrovic was discovered at 12 in a McDonald's, and again at 1, and then again at 2:30. This is like, it's a thoroughbred against a nag pulling a milk float. And I know that Fulham have shown signs of promise in one or two games, even, you know, the Liverpool game two or three weeks ago. But they keep losing. They just keep on losing. And they will lose this as well. It's basically, no one in the world is going to back City at 1-9. Basically, how far do you go on handicap before you get a quote of odds against for them? And whenever that is, that's when I'll be lumping on, because they'll win this in the cakewalk.
Manchester City -1 is 1-3. Manchester City -2 could appeal at a shared of odds on at 17-20. And Man City -3 at 2-1. Dom, the stats make grim reading for Fulham. They've lost their last 7 in the league. Defensively, they've been shocking. They've conceded 70 goals in 31 games. That's 11 more than any other team in the league. And they've also lost 25 of their last 26 Premier League matches against the Big Six, in inverted commas. Derek's right, there has been an upturn in performance, but that's not provided points. And you must have seen a lot of Fulham this season, Dom.
Yeah, I've seen their last 2 home games, actually, as well. And they, for an hour against Chelsea, they were completely outclassed and 2-0 down. But they actually roused themselves for the last half hour and might have nicked a point in that game. Liverpool really never found much of a rhythm, I didn't think, against Fulham, which I think that was probably more down to Liverpool than Fulham, though. But even so, they still nicked a pretty soft equaliser and contrived, found a way beyond that to chuck it away again, Fulham, quite literally, with the goalkeeper, who is very susceptible to untimely errors, let's put it. They're definitely disappointing. It's an imbalanced squad. It's a squad that's lost all the heart and soul that they had last season when they were playing such great stuff in the Championship. All their toils can really be linked back to the summer spending they did last year, when they spent £100 million. And although they had to buy in bulk because they had so many loan players, they didn't buy pedigree for Premier League level, really. It just hasn't worked for them at all. They know they're going down. They just want one or two rallying performances towards the end of the season just to offer them some hope and a bit of momentum going back into the Championship, but they won't get that against Manchester City. If City score early, then it could be pretty ugly.
What are you going for prediction-wise, Dom?
I'll go 3-0 City.
Yeah, I can see that. 3-0 to Manchester City, available at 11-2. Let's move on to West Ham versus Everton. 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. The Hammers are 6-4 to win the game. The draw 12-5, with Everton in the market at 9-5. Enhancements, Felipe Anderson to score and West Ham to win was 7-2. That's been boosted to 9-2. And Richarlison, who's got 13 goals this season, to score in an Everton win was 17-5. That's been enhanced to 4-1. Only 2 points separate the two teams coming into the weekend, with West Ham 9th and Everton 11th, and both coming off decent results as well. West Ham came from 3-1 down to beat Huddersfield a fortnight ago, with Chicharito scoring twice late in that game. And Everton beat Chelsea 2-0 at Goodison. Both teams have been inconsistent this season, Dom. West Ham have a good recent home record. Everton really underachieved for a club of their stature. 11th in the league going into the weekend.
Yeah, look, I know Everton were great in the second half against Chelsea just before the international break, but they've been utterly underwhelming, really, this season. And I personally have my doubts about Marco Silva being the man to turn things around there. Again, it's another club that's got a bloated squad as a result of managerial changes in the past, and each man bringing in his own guys, and they just look as if they're still a squad in transition. That said, I mean, West Ham have underachieved. I think, I mean, had a dreadful start and picked up again, but just as they looked as if they were going to kick on into that top seven or eight, that they've tailed off again. And okay, their home form's been good, but they're so inconsistent. As you say, you just never know what you're going to get from them. And even that last home game, you shouldn't forget they were 3-1 down to Huddersfield at one point in that match.
Yeah,
which is almost inconceivable. So I look at these two teams and, okay, it may be that West Ham are building towards something. I think that some of their signings last summer will be better next season. So they have got some kind of long-term vision as to where they're going. Everton does look as if they're treading water still to me. I don't see any strategy or long-term policy at that club as to what they're intending to do and how they're intending to break into that top six or seven. So, look, it'll probably be a high-scoring draw just because both these teams are completely unpredictable and you don't know how to read them. But I think both of them will be frustrated come the end of the season.
Yeah, I do love goals in this game. I think you got that spot on. Over 3.5 goals is available at 7-4. If you fancy a draw and both teams to score in the match, that's available at 14-5. One more question on this, Dom. Do you think, in regards to West Ham, that mid-season saga with Marko Arnautović unsettled them slightly?
Well, yeah, it must have had some effect. I would like to think that it's undermined the supporters' faith in Marko Arnautović,
yeah,
because he didn't cover himself in glory with that, and it sort of summed up the sort of rather mercenary nature of a lot of West Ham transfer dealings. But you know, he is one of their better players. He's not recaptured any kind of form since that saga, so it's clearly had an effect on him. And you know, he I still think ultimately we'll see him leaving the club probably in the summer, despite the fact that he signed a new contract. I'm not sure you ever really recover from an outburst like that, and when you take that stance that you want out, and your brother's making the comments that he was making, that he should be allowed to leave. I don't see really how you recover your faith from that. So I imagine he'll leave in the summer, and they'll have to rebuild again.
Derek, how do you view this game, West Ham Everton?
Well, I mean, all the Blue Noses are delighted after that result against Chelsea before the international break. But they've had a number of false dawns, Everton, this season. Well, recently. They won 5-1 at Burnley, I think it was around Christmas time. And then their very next game, that was a great result. Very next game, they lost 1-0 at Brighton. They beat Bournemouth 2-0, which again was a great result. In the next game, they lost at Southampton. They got rid of Ronald Koeman, remember, which was a great result. And then they appointed Sam Allardyce. So, the false dawns, I'm not getting worked up by Everton. West Ham won 3-1 there earlier in the season at Goodison. And Dom's right about Marco Silva. The uncertainty surrounding Marco Silva's job isn't helping the Blues at all. They haven't been bored to either say publicly that he's safe or tell the truth. because I like Silva, what he's done in previous clubs, but Everton are treading water under him. I don't know what it is. They've got a squad there that should be doing an awful lot better, and they're not. And sometimes you do have to point the finger of blame at the manager for that. West Ham are the great imponderables, I know, but the 6-4 to beat an Everton side that are just nothing to me. And that's my kind of bet, i.e. a winning one.
Alex Dunn here, and if you're looking for a Euro nap this weekend, I'm going to take you to Italy, where Udinese take on Genoa. And Genoa flying high off the back of beating Juventus just before the international break. That break probably came at the wrong time for them, though. And Udinese come here off the back of defeats against Juve and Napoli, but there's no shame in that, really. Their home form, on the whole, is pretty solid, Udinese. It certainly has been since the end of November. And Genoa, away from home, have actually only won twice in the league all season. So I'm quite happy to side with the home side here. It could be a case of after the Lord Mayor's show for Genoa. They could be flying high. I have a feeling that they'll fall flat on their face here. Udinese, the selection, at 6-4.
On to Sunday, then. We'll start with Cardiff versus Chelsea. Cardiff 15-2 to win the game. The draw 17-5 with Chelsea 42-100. Victor Camarasa to score and Cardiff to win was 14-1. That's been enhanced to 18-1. Eden Hazard to score in a Chelsea win. That was 5-4. That's been enhanced to 7-5. Hazard, by the way, has scored 5 Premier League goals in 3 appearances against Cardiff, although all those goals have come at Stamford Bridge. This is an interesting game, this one, I think, Derek, because Cardiff are the only team in the bottom three with a genuine chance of survival, and they picked up that big result against West Ham a fortnight ago, and they're probably meeting Chelsea at the right time here. Chelsea have slipped to sixth in the league going into this weekend, and they've been disastrous on the road this calendar year as well.
Yeah, they haven't done well. I mean, I keep looking at that Chelsea squad and I think they should be sort of challenging for the title, and they keep making me look like an idiot with some of the performances. But this is as near to a gimme for them as you're going to get. In 2 of the last 3 home games, Cardiff I'm talking about, they've lost 5-1 to Watford and 3-1 to Everton. I mean, that takes some doing that. 4 members of the Big Six have played at Cardiff in the league this season. Arsenal scored 3, Man City 5, Man United 5 and Tottenham 3. So Chelsea are going to be scoring big time. Chelsea put 4 past Cardiff at the Bridge earlier this season. They scored 3 at Huddersfield, 3 at Southampton, 4 at Burnley. Chelsea -2 at not far off the even money mark. Not so much a possibility as an absolute certainty. Unless I'm wrong, Dave, and then by then I'll have one after another certainty to get all your money back and more, so don't worry about that. Chelsea win this all day long, which is generally how long a Cardiff match seems to go on for. I think they're absolute certainties.
Chelsea -1 is 11-10. Chelsea -2, Derek, is 3-1.
I meant -1.
-1. Okay. Yep. -1, 11-10 for Derek. Do you see this as a foregone conclusion, Dom?
Well, it should be. It should be, given Cardiff's record against the big clubs and the fact that, you know, they're without Sol Bamba, their sort of talismanic defender. They almost sort of forget about games against the elite and concentrate on beating the sort of mid-table teams. But the only spanner in the works is that Chelsea are unbelievably difficult to read. I mean, they're really, really... I mean, and actually, it's almost as if Maurizio Sarri is living off that win over Spurs that he had towards the end of February at the moment. If they hadn't won that game and the Champions League places had drifted 4 or 5 points away by now, I genuinely think that the ball would have had a really big decision to make in this international window. And he is in big trouble, Maurizio Sarri, still. When you consider that, you know, they lost to Everton their last match, they were lucky to get a point against Wolves in the match before that at home. They weren't great at Fulham in the league game before that. Then there was the Spurs match. And then you're sort of getting back into the realms of your 6-0 defeats to Manchester City. At the moment, he's been sustained by an excellent Europa League campaign against some pretty average teams. He hasn't been performing in the league at all, and the players that he's relying upon the same players. He never experiments. He never tries a Callum Hudson-Odoi for anything more than about 15 minutes in league games. But I think there's a lot of pressure on Sarri at the moment, and it's almost gone under the radar because he's done so well in the Europa League. I don't think this will be as easy as those other matches that the elite teams have had at Cardiff. Chelsea should win, and if their players turn up and perform like we know they can do, then they will win. But there are no guarantees with Chelsea at the moment, absolutely none. I mean, there's a simmering discontent at that club. And, well, look, there isn't a managerial change before the end of the season. I'll be pretty sure there will be one at the end of the season if they don't qualify for the Champions League one way or the other.
Maybe have a look at Cardiff on the handicap then for Dom. Cardiff plus one is 7-4. Cardiff plus two, 4-7. So a difference of opinion perhaps in that game at Sunday 2:05. Big game this weekend, undoubtedly. The 4:30 kickoff at Anfield on Sunday. Liverpool versus Spurs. Liverpool odds on at 4-7. The draw 16-5. Spurs 24-5. Enhancement, Sadio Mane to score in a Liverpool win. Was 29-20. That's been enhanced to 7-4. And Harry Kane to score in a Spurs win. Was 9-2. That's been boosted out to 11-2. Liverpool on this incredible unbeaten run at home in the Premier League. They've gone 36 without defeat at Anfield. And if they avoid a loss here, it will be the joint second longest unbeaten run at home in the competition's history. And they've lost just one of their last 24 home Premier League games against Spurs as well. So I suppose that's why, Dom, they're so short in the betting at 4-7. But I just get the feeling the international break came at the right time for Spurs. They've got Harry Kane back fit and firing now. I'd expect to see a different Spurs side this weekend.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. Dele Alli's had some minutes under his belt as well. But the only thing I'd say on that is that you don't know what state those guys have gone back to their clubs in. I mean, they've had a lot of international players in this window. While Mo Salah's had a little bit of a break for Liverpool and will come back nice and refreshed, Spurs have had a lot of players away. So we don't quite know what state they're going to be in fitness-wise. They've lost their last three away games, I think, in the league. They're in their worst run of form of the season. But they also have the sort of almost distraction of Wednesday night, their big homecoming, with an eminently winnable game against Crystal Palace at the new White Hart Lane. And I just wonder whether actually Liverpool will be looking at this and licking their lips, to be honest.
Cause right.
I don't really see Spurs troubling the scorers at Anfield, and then you're in big trouble with them, because four away defeats on the bounce and no wins in five games, they're in danger of being overtaken in third place, and you know then their season becomes a scrap for top four qualification. So it'll be interesting. It's an intriguing game, but I really can't see much beyond a home win.
Liverpool to win to nil. Do you think, Dom? Then that's 7-4.
Oh, I wouldn't necessarily say to nil, seeing how Virgil van Dijk played in midweek against the Germans. But Liverpool have got too much firepower for Spurs. I think they'll edge it. It'll be 2-1, 3-1, something like that.
Liverpool to win and both teams to score is 2-1. Liverpool to win 2-1 is 7-1. Liverpool to win 3-1 available at 10-1. There have been maybe a few chinks in the armour of Virgil van Dijk. He's been a colossus for Liverpool so far this season, but made that mistake at Fulham, and Dom's just commented on the midweek performance internationally as well. Derek, these prices are very lopsided in Liverpool's favour. Is that right? Is it wrong, or are you indifferent to that?
It's totally wrong. As a punter, I can't be indifferent to that. If you had put a gun to my head, Dave, and said who's going to win this game, well, given Spurs is low form at the moment, I'd say Liverpool without question. But value punters will say that there comes a time when the price is so large that Spurs, no matter how poorly they're playing, have to be back. And that price is 9-2. I don't understand how they can be that price. Remember that game at Anfield last season, finished 2-2. Spurs cheated their way to two penalties without question. But in the second half, they were miles the better team. And with Spurs, yeah, they are playing poorly. But they've had this international break. It probably did come at the right time for them. And if they pull themselves together, they're too good to go to Anfield to be priced at 9-2. I'm not getting worked up by Liverpool. They're in a fantastic position to win the league. They've got a lot more home games to come, by the way, than Manchester City. And they could easily win the league. But I've said on this bulletin many times, Dave, I just haven't seen them play well, Alisson. You'd say that Bayern Munich away game out of the equation. I know, it's very glib to say that, but you take that performance, and I'd have to go back an awful long way before I was impressed since I was last impressed by Liverpool. And that game, the most recent Premier League game against Fulham, they were absolutely pony, and a half-decent team would have beaten them. I can't back them with 4-7 to beat Spurs on that. So I'm going to have to go for the Londoners here, because they're just too good a team to be 9-2, especially when you look at their away record, how many games you've won away from home. One more game in the Premier League away from home than anyone.
OK, Spurs the bet for Derek. And we finished the weekend's Premier League football with Arsenal versus Newcastle at the Emirates. Arsenal 38-100 to win this game. The draw 19-5 with Newcastle 15-2. The enhancements, Alexandre Lacazette to score in an Arsenal win was 23-20. That's been enhanced to 11-8. And Salomon Rondon to score in a Newcastle win was 10-1. That's been enhanced to 14-1. I was right about Rondon, Derek. I told you he'd come good. He's been fantastic, hasn't he, for Newcastle recently. Newcastle have been good as well. They've won three of the last five in the league. Yeah. They drew 2-2 with Bournemouth a fortnight ago. And Rondon scored in his last two for Newcastle and got one for Venezuela in their 3-2 win in an international friendly against Argentina as well. They seem to have a bit of balance in that Newcastle side all of a sudden.
Yeah, he's the perfect price for them. The perfect player for them. And you know, this match is being priced up like it's a cakewalk for Arsenal, and it definitely isn't that. No match against the Rafa Benitez side could ever be a cakewalk. You look at Benitez now. Can you imagine? I mean, looking at Arsenal, you look at Rafa Benitez. Can you imagine Mesut Ozil ever getting a game in a Benitez team? He just wouldn't, would he? He's so lazy. He has moss growing. Benitez will look at an Arsenal team sheet, and if he sees Ozil in it, he'll laugh his head off. Because that will, you know, and if I see it, I'll laugh my head off before a lump on Newcastle. I know that not many teams go to Arsenal and win. I think they've only lost one at home all season. So maybe it is pressing it to think Newcastle are going to go with it, even at 15-2 and win. But they're 8-11 with a two-goal start. And to paraphrase Lee Phelps at a Buffy, Dave, I'm having plenty of that. I mean, Cardiff only lost 2-1 at the Emirates. Arsenal needed a late goal to beat Huddersfield 1-0 earlier in the season. This match was only 1-0 last season. Newcastle, 3 wins and 2 draws in their last 6. And they're 8-11 with a 2-goal start. It's lump on territory.
8-11 plus 2 for Newcastle for Derek. Dom, Arsenal have won their last 9 Premier League home games. Have you been impressed with what you've seen from Arsenal this season or not?
In patches, definitely. They've played well, but they're still very much a work in progress. It's a project. I hate that phrase, but it is a project with Unai Emery there. There's a lot of changes trying to happen behind the scenes as well. They're still looking to appoint the director of football. I think he has made sort of quiet progress. And he probably, the club probably couldn't have expected or hoped for anything more post Wenger, but it's by no means a finished article. They're fourth at the moment, aren't they? And they'll look at this weekend and see it as an opportunity, possibly even to overhaul Spurs, which would be an amazing fillip at this stage. I can see them; they'll win this game, but it'll be as Derek says. I think it'll be a real slog, because Benitez's teams never roll over. So I think it'll be a 1-0 or a 2-1, something very tight. But I do see another a 10th successive Arsenal home win in the league coming on Monday night.
Arsenal to win 1-0 is available at 13-2. Arsenal to win 2-1 in the game is 7-1. That brings us to the end of the podcast. So we need the best bets from the chaps. Dom, you are our guest this week. So what's your best bet this week?
I don't know what the odds are, but what are the odds of Huddersfield going down this weekend? I think it takes a defeat at Palace, which not many teams lose at Crystal Palace, let's be honest, but Huddersfield probably will. And I think Southampton need to get something at Brighton, and Burnley need to get something at home to Wolves to condemn Huddersfield to the drop. But been coming for a while off. I can see it happening this weekend.
Yeah, I'll put Palace in for the purpose of this treble. Palace 4-9 to beat Huddersfield and condemn them to relegation into the Championship. Derek, what's your best bet?
There aren't rich pickings this weekend. They never are for me. But 11-10 Chelsea minus a goal at Cardiff. Nailed on.
Chelsea minus 1, 11-10. And I'm going to go for Raheem Sterling to score first at 3-1 in that game away at Fulham. Sterling's just been on fire recently. Real confidence player. He's got 8 in his last 5 and he scored first twice in those 5 games as well. So I think 3-1's value on Sterling to score first. So Palace at 4-9, Chelsea -1 at 11-10, and Raheem Sterling to score first at 3-1. That's an 11-1 punt podcast treble for the action this weekend. Dom, thank you for your company.
Pleasure. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Derek.
Pleasure, Dave.
And we're going to finish this podcast with a look at the Football League in the company of Pete Farries, Gav Pushlowski, and Al Ross.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and for my nap in the Championship this week, after being, I think, pretty cruelly robbed last time around by Hull, I'm going to take Preston to win. Preston are travelling to the Medeski to take on a side who, of course, improved massively at home under the new gaffer, but a side who here, at home, were picked off 3-0 by Leeds United last time. For Preston, their form has been absolutely cracking. They've won 4 of their last 5 games, they've won at the Riverside, they've won at Ewood Park, and they won at a Millwall side who, while poor, still have that incredible home advantage. So Preston, for me, seemed like an absolutely incredible way in. Pre-season, I backed them for promotion. They struggled at the start, but they have flown up the rankings, just on the edge of the playoff places. 13-10 for me is a massive price. I would half consider an odds-on price for Preston to win here. Reading aren't poor, they really aren't. They are, I think, improving massively at their very core, but importantly this week, I think Preston still win. That's my nap this week. It's Preston at 13-10. Very best of luck with whatever you're backing. Let's head to Gav Pushlowski and get his thoughts on League One.
I'm going to put up a bet in League One that I'd never put up before as my nap. And no, it's not a winning one before you hit me with your sarcasm. Luton are 5-6 to an away at Bristol Rovers, and that seems fine on the outset. Luton, top of the table, and have won 4 of their last 5 games on their travels, and Bristol Rovers have failed to score in 2 or 3 at home. But if you dig deeper, that's where you find the value for Luton. Their 4 victories away from home of late, they've won the first half in all 4. And Bristol Rovers' last defeat at home, they lost the first half to Sunderland and then lost the second half as well. So that is where the value is for me. Luton to win the first half is great at 8-5, but I'm going for the double result for Luton to be leading at half-time and win the match thereafter at 19-10. That is my nap selection this weekend. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
I was looking at several options this week, thinking the traders would have cottoned on that Tranmere should be prohibitively short given their exceptional form against the Carlisle side with just 1 win in 9. They haven't cottoned on at all, have they? Tranmere have won 6 in a row. They've not lost in 8. In those 8 games, they've conceded 2. They should not be odds against anyone, let alone a side who are out of form, let alone with home advantage against a side who are out of form, and yet here they are at 11-10. I tipped them last week odds against. They won again. I tipped James Norwood to score again. He did again. He scored in all of the last 4, 5 of the last 6 at home, 9 of the last 12 anywhere, yet even money any time. Also 19-10 to score in a Tranmere win, which is where my personal money has gone this week. But for this podcast, I'm just napping the outright. Carlisle averaging less than a point a game since the start of February. How on earth do you back that? Away at a side on a 6-match winning streak, yet who are 5 points off the automatic places, so still have lots to play for. That's beyond me. So I'm not going to. Tranmere, 11-10.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.